Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Mark Catlett, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Management at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And joining us in our conversation is another PwC partner, Greg Grieben.
Mark, you were part of a task force at VA, which was commissioned to look at the procurement process. Can you tell us more about the goals of the task force and your role in it?
When Secretary Principi came, this is one of the, obviously had a lot of things he wanted to accomplish. He knew the VA, and a lot of things he knew needed to be done. Through his previous role as Deputy Secretary, his commission work under the other administration, or commissioned by the Hill, and looking at veterans benefits. And in our area, the one thing that he was most interested in was procurement reform. I mean, we have a good track record. Many people know about what we do with our formulary and competing prices for the pharmaceuticals that we provide veterans and getting excellent prices in that. And he wanted to see that emulated across the rest of our activities. We spend close to $6 billion for all types of medical supplies, I mean, including the pharmaceuticals and all other types of supplies and requirements to serve veterans. And he wanted to see changes there that would bring about the efficiencies and the competitiveness and the pricing that we were getting with pharmaceuticals. So that's it in a nutshell. I served as the deputy chair, if you will. Dr. Bob Weeb from California, one of the network directors in our health system, was named as the chair. Obviously, as with most things, you have this competing interest, obviously trying to strive for efficiency in the pricing process and the procurement. You have to be careful that you don't shortchange the quality of the material. And so it was important to have a health leader lead the team, and we had strong representation from other field folks and some clinical folks on the team as well, so that we maintain that balance. While we're striving from guys like me for, you know, better pricing, we have to make sure that we do that correctly. The focus of the task force that we've reported out now or we're implementing were some basic things. Standardization, which I've implied, as we have done in pharmaceuticals and the creation of a formulary, bringing that to what we call the medical and surgical supplies as well. We've been attempting that over the last 5 years, but not very successfully. And again, it's sort of physicians' desire to use the product lines that they like. And so that's the competition we have. And they'll always discuss quality of care if you try to direct it too much. So we have to bring about standardization and find a way that's physicians standardized. We can't, as procurement officials and budget types, say, okay, you have to standardize and choose this product line. They know best in terms of the care. So we have to have it physician-led, and that's what we're trying to get done. The other broad area that we knew we had concern about, what we have to address, is basically the role of data, both for our customer and then for us as providers. First, for the customers, it's one thing to standardize, if we can, all these product lines, but they don't know where to buy it. They don't know where to go to buy it. Cataloging that, we're trying to use GSA's Advantage system, trying to get where it's in real time, on screen, at the touch, where they can go to find, in a good catalog, find the product lines they need. If we standardize and said, you've got to buy this, they have to know how to get to it. And we've made some progress there, but there's a lot of room to improve. Secondly, for data as well, we need, as the providers, we need a national item file. We need to standardize the nomenclature that we use for all these things, thousands, tens of thousands of things that we buy. We need to standardize that so that we need to have a standard language for that nomenclature so that we know how to bid that in the market competitive. We have to roll up and decide where is our best opportunities to get competitive pricing. So we have to know what we're buying. So those are the primary focuses of the task force.
Clearly the procurement reform will promote better management. What are the direct benefits to the veteran?
Well, the direct benefits to the veteran are a little, in this way, are a little indirect, I guess is the way I approach it. We hope, as we are, if we're faced now, we have more in the broad scheme for healthcare, and this is focused on healthcare, which is where our big bucks are. We have more patients than funds we have, resources we have to treat them. So we have to stretch our resources to get the bang for the buck, basically. So the better we buy, and as long as we don't compromise quality, the more efficiently we buy means there's more resources for staffing, which is still our primary resource in providing healthcare. You know, 60% of our cost is payroll. We have to squeeze as much as we can out of the supply side, the non-payroll side, so that we can hire more physicians and nurses to provide care. We are swamped with patients, and we are in a tough, like I said, we're a victim of our own success to look to things the way VA has changed in the last 5 years. We've made access, we've made ourselves accessible with hundreds of more clinics, and we have improved the quality of the service. We've made it the way it should be in terms of health focus and not a hospital focus. So that means the care's out there as it's being provided. So we have more than doubled the number of veterans getting care from us, and probably by 2.5 times the number seeking care from us in the last 6 or 7 years. So we have to be as efficient as we can in order to provide as much service as we can within the dollars we have. Healthcare is for us is a discretionary expense. It's subject to availability of funds. A lot of the other things we do for veterans are mandatory, which means that whatever the demand is, the money is to be provided to them. There's transfer payments for compensation and pension, provide the guarantees for housing, provide vocational rehabilitation. Those all are mandatory. If the demand doubles, the money has to follow. Well, in healthcare, it's not that simple. We get an annual appropriation, and we have to live within the resources. And we are pressed to the point now of thinking about having to restrict the number of veterans who come to us for care, which we haven't had to do in the past because the demand is so great.
The Department of Defense and Veterans Affairs have operated separately, even though the departments serve many of the same people. And I'm curious what the state of cooperation is between the two departments.
With this administration, I think I have seen, again, being around for a long time, we've had efforts, and we always have efforts at collaboration and cooperation. As one example, we have probably 140 of our medical centers have a contract to be a TRICARE provider, but literally less than $10 million of care is purchased by DOD from us. So it's very, very minimal in that regard. The thing that's improved with this administration is obviously the president first established a task force to look at it, and there was an interim report just released within the last couple of weeks. But there will be another year before they report. And clearly, Secretary Principe was not satisfied with waiting more than 2 years to try to improve that. The Deputy Secretary, Dr. Leo McKay, and Dr. David Chu from DOD have formed a joint executive council. Dr. Kaiser in the last administration formed a health council with DOD, and there was a lot of work on specific projects and activities. That's been incorporated now under this broader council. At the top with the deputy secretary, the number two guy at the VA leading it for the VA, and bringing in a benefits council. And now we're talking about creating a facilities council that would be something that I would be probably co-chairing, looking at how we better coordinate the expansion and the improvement of our facilities. I mean, that's where we can make the biggest bang for it. As we know, there's a lot of people that we overlap, but many more don't need DOD and the VA. There's about 600,000 military retirees who are those who could get care, who are dually eligible. They can get care from the VA or from the military as a retiree. But most veterans who leave the military don't have a career at the VA, aren't retirees, so they don't have an option with DOD. They're the VAs. And then with the military as well, you have many, many dependents, hundreds of thousands of dependents of current and current service members. So actually, the group that is the smallest piece of their population and ours, if you split it in two, are the ones where we have commonality or where they have dual eligibility. But still 600,000 is significant. And that's, to put it in proportion, that's out of about 6 million that are enrolled with us. We have better, much more forceful leadership from the top to bring about. And we were meeting quarterly in that group, and we have an agenda set. And in fact, the next step is to create what we're calling a strategic plan for this group. We'll be meeting next week to try to lay out what we want to accomplish over the next 5 years. I mean, they've laid out an agenda for this next year. Mm-hmm. We want to make it a little broader so we can reach agreement on that.
What's taken so long for this to come together? Are there historical issues?
I would say the broad issue, as I tried to indicate, is that the numbers of people that really have dual eligibility aren't all of them. It's the minority of the folks that get health care through DOD and at the VA. But most important, probably, I think, is the military's concern with maintaining a military presence for preparedness when there is a conflict in which there would be a huge number of casualties. I mean, we have a backup role there, But, you know, practicing battlefield medicine and all of that intensity that goes with that and the follow-through with that is something that, that we don't do. And I feel that at DOD military and DOD medicine wants to protect that. I mean, there's been some that say, yeah, you ought to make it one system, merge it, it's all veterans, what the heck. But I think it's DOD interested in making sure that they have a system of sufficient size so that you can have, keep the skill level up for the people who are needed when they're needed. So that in effect, you have to have docs, you know, practicing their skills here when it comes. And you can't practice, obviously, battlefield medicine, but still surgery and some of the basics of healthcare. Mm-hmm. You have to have them doing something for when the time comes and is needed. So that's, to me, that's it in a nutshell.
It's a good stopping point. It's time for a break. Come back with us in a few minutes as we continue our conversation about management with Mark Catlett of the VA. What steps is the VA taking to get to green on OMB's management scorecard? We'll ask Mark when the Business of Government Hour continues.